Shavuot Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Eretz Chemda Tovol Chava, is daf Samach Hey, and we got a little bit ahead up to Aval Amru Chachamim Kol Of. Now let's try that again. Shavuot Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin. Brought to you from Eretz Chemda Tova Urchava, this Dav Samach Hey, and we got up to the two dots, about a quarter of the way down. Aval Amru Chachamim. So the Chachamim said that any of which is Dairis and so on, and then we went ahead with the different simanim. So if it's Dairis, so then it's not kosher. If it has an Etzba Yisera, and it has a zefek, and it has a kurkava niklaf, then it is kosher. And Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Tzadik said that if a bird splits its feet so it holds on to a wire in such a way that the toes go to both sides, so then it's not kosher. So the price expands on this a little bit. Tanya. Rebbe Gamliel omer, doreis v'ochrab. So if the bird actually is doreis, then for sure, bihadua shuhu tamei. So the question is, of course, what exactly is the level of drisa that we're talking about? So remember that Rashi said before that the drisa that is definitely tamei is that it holds the food, bringing it up to its mouth, and it doesn't take it from the ground. Now, that's a little bit strange, because that's basically the way that Rashi explained it there in the Mishnah. But when he goes along, he says that the drisa is that it holds the food down with its foot and eats it while it's on the ground, which is a little bit strange. That's what Rashi said afterwards when we were going through the brisa. But then, of course, we had that it actually kills prey. It's another pshat. And that it eats it before it dies, which is yet another pshat. That's the Rabbi Natan. Okay. The question is whether it's exactly always the same, whether Rashi very advisedly changed his pshat, because it's a kolo fadoris, is that it's a definitely a drisa. So that would be a greater level of drisa, which why Rashi would have explained it, that it actually lifts it, not that it keeps it down, because otherwise we got a little bit of a problem. Because remember that the peres v'ozniyah only have one simen, and it's not the same simen. Now, if it's not the same simen, that means that one of them has to be deres v'echa. So how in the world do you ever have a peres v'ozniyah with two different simonim? So perhaps there's two levels that we're talking about over here. Doris va'ochel on this level, that it picks it up, that is something else. A doris va'ochel that it keeps it on the ground while it tears at it, that is, if it doesn't do that, it's one of the simonim of Tyra. But it doesn't mean 100% that it's tamei otherwise. Perhaps. Anyway, keep that in mind. So, let's take a look at the price, Tanya. If it is Dores, then for sure it's Tame. If it's not Dores, so then we can look at the simonim of Yeshlo Etzba Yitera, Yeshlo Zefek, and it is a Kurkavan that is Niklaf. If it has all four simonim, so then for sure it's kosher. Rebbe Lazar Rabitzato Komer, there's an easy way to check for this, because if you spread an electric wire out, or a cord, regular cord, a chuchal mashicha, and it sits on that wire, im cholik et raglav shtayim lakam v'shtayim lakam. So if it puts two in one direction and two in the other direction, that is a simen that it's dores, and therefore it's tummy. If it actually uses three in one side and one on the other side, it might be tahar. Doesn't mean it's definitely tahar, but it certainly might be tahar. And we have to look at the other simoni. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, one thing I can tell you for sure. If the bird is kolet min ha'avir, if it grabs its food while it's in the air, then for sure it is tame. Well, wait a minute, that's not true. Everybody eats the tziparta bird, and that's a kosher bird, and it grabs whatever bugs and whatever it grabs in the middle of the air. True. But what we were talking about as a simen of definite tumah is where it catches and eats. But the tziparta catches, but then it goes to its nest or lands where it needs to land, and then it eats it. But we mean kolet v'ochel, that it actually swallows it, opens its mouth, swallows it in midair. Acherim omrim, that if a bird actually lives together with tameim, then you can be sure that it is also a subspecies of those birds. Birds that flock together are tamei together. So if there's one bird, one of those meaning is tamei, then that means whatever's with them. If it only stays with tahorim, so then it's kosher. So wait a minute, this only works out according to Rabbi Eliezer, right? Because remember we said that Rabbi Eliezer, who includes the zarzir as the min of the orev, so in the Braita, Rabbi Eliezer explained himself by saying, lo lechinam alach zarzir etel orev. Look, it's not a coincidence that these zarzirim always make their homes with orvim. It's because b'pnei shehu mino. So you see that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the very fact that the birds will actually nest together with the orvim means that it's got to be also a type of non-kosher bird, right? But according to Chachamim, who never agreed that the zarzir is not kosher, so then apparently they don't hold of Rebbe Eliezer. And if they don't hold of Rebbe Eliezer, so then the Acherim that you just quoted, the Acherim Emrim, Shochenim Tameim Tomei, would not be true according to Chachamim. Strange, I mean, that they would take a Das Yochid and make that the Halacha. Naftali, you're getting distracted, my dearest. We need you with us. All that extra brain power and heart power. Bring it all to bear. They're still after you, huh? Don't listen.
No, not that, lady. Just went to have a great Shabbos. Felt sick and I'm counting.
Afil tema rabbanon. You don't have to say it's going even only according to Rabbi Eliezer. It could be going like the rabbanon too, because the rabbanon, it could be the acherim over here did not just mean that it nests. It means it nests and it looks similar. Shachin v'nidmeh. Mash'enkein, the zarzir doesn't look anything like an orev. And Rabbi Eliezer holds it doesn't even have to be similar. It's the very fact that it nests together means that it's actually like an orev. Now, let us move on to the four simanim that we had about grasshoppers and locusts. So let's think about that. So, the Mishnah said that any time that you have a chagaf that has four raglayim, and it's got four knafayim, and it has karsulayim, which are those jumping legs, those big, they go all the way up and then down again, it gives them a nice jump, and the knafava chofimet rubo, those four simanim are all part of its simon that it's kosher. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says it's not enough. Its name, Shmo, has to be Chagav. Shmo Chagav. So let's analyze these one by one. So first of all, what you said over here is that it's Chofa et Rubo. What do you mean exactly by Rubo? I mean, because Rubo could mean the long, the entire torso. So it would be the long rove of the torso. A rubo could mean that it covers the width. So Rabbi Yehuda said that what Rob said was that it has to have very long wings that cover most of the length. But others say that what Rob had said was rove hekefo. It just needs to go around most of, so this is more than the rochav, it's the actual circumference. So it has to come down along the sides as well. And remember, Rav Papa isn't called Rav Papa for nothing. It's because he's got two pez. And every time we have a situation, Rav Papa says the same thing. Well, if you can't make up your mind if it's Rav Orko or Rav Hekefo, then you need both. Be'inan Rav Orko, u'be'inan Rav Hekefo. That way, we'll be Yotze both. Tana Rabbana. How about if it does not have these kartsulayim, because it's still not fully mature. But when it matures, it's going to have these Carrotsulaeum. It's the species that grows Carrotsulaeum after it reaches a certain stage in its development. And it's atid legadel le'acher zman. Does it actually need the Carrotsulaeum, or are the Carrotsulaeum just a sinon of the species? So, for instance, we've got a zachal. A zachal is zochel until it matures. So we call it a zachal because it's very clearly weird that it can't jump when it's little. So it just crawls around. So this zachal, in the end, actually does develop the normal Carrotsulaeum to jump with. It's mutter, even when it's still a zachal. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, you can see this by the strange way that the Torah introduces the kra'ayim, which are the Carrotsulaeum. And it spells asher lo kra'ayim with an aleph instead of with a vav. That's weird. It doesn't have, I mean, you have to say asher ein lo. What's this? And asher lo kra'ayim, it does, it doesn't. That means, af al pi she'ein lo achshav, v'atid legadel le'acher zman. Remember, we have the same idea with the ear asher lo choma. It doesn't have a wall. It means it doesn't have the wall now, but it did have the wall at the time of Yoshua bin Nun. Anyway, what is this zachal in our terms? Omer Abaye, that's the askri. Tana Rabbana. Now, we're going to have some fantastic analysis over here of the psukim. And these analyses are extremely different, even though on the surface they sound pretty much the same. It turns out they're built on completely different ways of reading a pasuk. And we've got two brises that we're going to refer to. One of them is going to be called the brisa that is in the Beirav. And that's the reason it's in the Beirav is because it's Teras Kayanim. Teras Kayanim was the brises that everybody knew. But we also have these private brises the Gemara keeps bringing us away, the Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. A Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael is like not a famous brisa, but it's a brayta that we all often will learn from, and we'll put these two braytot one against the other. So let's start with the modality of the Tana Rabbanan from Teras Kayanim, which is the Tana Veirav. Et Eila Mehem Tochel. So let's pay a little bit of attention and see what the pasuk actually tells us about the meaning, because it's important to catch every nuance of that pasuk. Et ele mehem tochelu. So this we have in the list in Shmini. These are the ones that you can eat of these grasshoppers. Et ha'arbe lemino. Et ha'sol'am leminehu. V'et ha'chargol leminehu. V'et ha'chagav leminehu. So this is a rather strange list. I'll tell you why it's a rather strange list. The two species here that are most different from each other, it would have been sufficient to have said the arbe and the chargol, because they have certain elements that they do not share with the other at all. And the truth is that the sol'am comes between these two, and it's strange that it should if it's meant to be nidrash. I'll tell you why. And we're going to see that the Gemara sort of ignores the Solam, even though it's written as the second one in the Pasuk. And the reason it ignores it is because the Arba and the Chargol are extremes. They're very different from each other. And the Solam is not as different from either one as the two are from each other, because each one of those is only different from the sol'am in one element, whereas the arbe and the chargol are completely different from each other. How is that? So there's additional issues that the Torah doesn't mention, and that we're concerned because of the fact that the Torah actually gave us examples that the striking element in each one of these examples may be critical to the identification of the kashrus, because what the arba has is a gabachat. A gabachat means that it's got a bald head. Many of these grasshoppers and locusts have a little bit of fuzz on their head, and the arbat does not have, has that. It doesn't have the gabachat, which is the baldy. So it's got a little fuzz. Also, it does not have a tail. Now, none of these really do have a tail, but it looks like a tail. That's like the ovipositor on the back that goes out in some species. It looks like a long tail. So there's no gabachat because it's got a little fuzz on its head in the arba, and there is no tail. The chargol has a gabachat, so it's completely bald, and it does have a tail. So that means that the two minim that are really very different from each other are the arba and the chargo. But the sol'am is actually only different from one or the other in one way. And therefore, we could have left the sol'am out, and all we needed to mention was the arba and the chargo. And therefore, the Gemara is going to ignore the sol'am because it's clearly not part of what we need to know for our basic yediyah. So that's why we're going to do this funny thing here in how it is that we put all of these together. So if we're analyzing each one of these species, so then we do it this way. Et ela mehem tochlu. So then we analyze the names that we're familiar with. But let's skip the limino and the limineu. We have four mentions. First one is limino, then we go to limineu. And we'll see what we do with those additional mentions. So let's first take what we know to be the arba. The arba is called the gobai. The solam is called the rashon. The chargol is called the nipul. And the chagav is called Gideon. But what is the limino, limineu, four different times on each one of these four species? So that adds, in fact, four similar species. It adds the Tziporet HaKramim, the Yuchanah HaYerushalmit, the Artsuvia, and the Razvanit, which is similar, each one of these, Mino, is similar to the main species that the Torah mentioned. So this is one approach in which we darshan each one of these words to mean a particular species. Devei Rabbi Shmuel says, no, this is a completely wrong way of looking at the pasuk. Actually, Liminehu is a klal. And the specific mention of a species is a prat. And therefore, the way to look at this is to look at it as klole klolot. We have, for some reason, separate klals. Limineu, limino, limineu, limineu. And we've got these separate pratim. So I would read it like this, says the Tanna Devei Rabbi Shmuel. The arba is the govai. Correct. Now, the limino, that is adding the tziporet akramim, which is similar to the tziporet akramim, is similar to the arba. Just like the arba does not have a bald head, which is called the gabachat, and it's got a little fuzz on top, the tziporet akramim does too. Now, that means that if we're darshaning this as a klal prat uklal, so we're saying, es elu tochlu, and then it lists these words. So then that would mean, if this was all that we had, it would mean that anything that has the four simanim, which are listed in the Mishnah, and also is similar to the arba in that it does not have a bald head, then you can eat it. So you would have a total of five simanim. It would need to have the four simanim mentioned in the Mishnah, plus the additional simon, which the Tziporet HaKramim has, in which it's similar to the arba. So now, what would happen if you find another type of grasshopper that actually has all of the four simonim that the Mishnah has, but it does have a bald head, and therefore it's not similar to the Arba and to the Tzipora Takrami. What would be the din then? Minayin. How would you know that you could also utilize that meat? Well, Talmud Lomar Sol Am. The Sol Am, that is the nipple, and Leminehu is to add the Ushkaf. So therefore, if it comes, it's not Dome La'arba, but it is Dome to the Sol Am. And they actually do have a Gapachat, and the Torah says that it's kosher. So therefore, we can now learn that we have possibilities of the four simonim either with a gabachat or without a gabachat. Doesn't bother me. Okay, now suppose we find another grasshopper. So we find a grasshopper that does have a gabachat, doesn't have a gabachat, but it does not. These are all without tails. How about if we find a grasshopper that does have a tail and it shares the four main simonim? What would be the din then? Habav yeshlo zanav. How would you know that you're allowed to even eat that? Ah, that's why it says chargol. Now the chargol is the rashon. And then that's the last one of the four. And then when it says liminehu, what is that? That's coming to add the karsefet, the shachlanit. All of those are the type of things that yesh lo zanav. Okay, so now we know that it's also klal prado klal. With the zanav, it's included with the klal prado klal of the chargol. So, these are two, put the arba and the chargol together, and that gives us a broad range. So now, the question is, what would we make of a tzad hashava from all of these? Because they're all different. So what you do is you make a mahatzad. Suppose you have another type of grasshopper that comes, and it doesn't have a tail, or it does have a tail. It doesn't have all of these. It does have a gabachat. It doesn't have a gabachat. You've already taught me. I can ignore those issues. But what about if you have a grasshopper that's brought in front of you and it does not have an elongated head? That's all fine. But what would happen if it does have an elongated head? Now, there's some arba that have an extremely long head. It looks almost like part of a stick. I'm sure you're familiar with those bugs that look like sticks when they're on the leaves. So they don't have a head that looks like a head at first sight. If anybody could post one of those pretty books, that would be nice. Does anybody have a nice picture of it? Oh, excellent. Akiva's going to post. Okay. So what would be if it's got this long head? It doesn't look anything like the other minim that we spoke about. Would that be okay? So now we end up doing something that is extremely disturbing, as we're about to see, and it's going to take a little bit of time until the Gemara points out how disturbing this is. The answer to that question is, what you need to do is you do a mahatzat. Hare atadan binyan av mishloshta. And you say, lo re'i arba kire'i chargol, lo re'i chargol kire'i arba. Well, look, we've got these major differences between the chargol and the arba, that they're different in two completely different ways, because we have the gabachat issue. And then when we get to the chargol, we are also dealing with the chargol, which does have a gabachat. And we said the arba does not have a gabachat. But then we had to also learn out, forget about the question of the gabachat, but how about the zanav question? So we also have this major difference that we needed to learn out, that if it's got whether it does have a tail or it doesn't have a tail, because between the arba and the chargol, we've got actually both of those non-simanim. One has no gabachat and no tail, one has a gabachat and a tail, so b'meila, there's no need for that sol'am, really, if you think about it. But what we do is we make a mahatzad, because we don't have a basis for an actual example of something that's got of one of these weird heads. So we say, lo re'i ha'arba kri ha'chargol, ve'lo re'i ha'chargol kri'i ha'arba. They're very, very different from each other. And therefore, what's the tzad ha'shave that comes between these two minim, and this is very, very strange, as you'll see, what the two minim is, the tzad hashava is that it has the four legs, and it's got the jumping legs, and it's got the four wings, and it's got the long or the broad wings that surround the circumference, and that is the tzad hashava. So Av Kol Sheyeshlo Arba Raglayim, the Arba Knafayim, the Kartzulayim, Uknafav Chofin Et Rubo. It's kosher even though it has a long head, which is ridiculous, because all of the examples that we use for the Mahatzad do not have a long head. So why in the world don't we just throw in the Mahatzad Hashave? Is that they don't have a long head, right? I mean, this is crazy. First, we looked at every one of these examples. And we said, okay, we can see that we can include anything that has the four simanim, but how about if it has a long head? And then we say, well, you know, we could just look at the tzad hashava shaban. But the tzad hashava shaban is that they don't have a long head. And yet we're somehow learning it out from the tzad hashava. So something is very strange, right? Okay, so we're going to get to this in a moment and learn what it is that's behind the real thing that's going on in the background. Asks the Braita, what about the Tzartzur? So the Tzartzur has Arba Raglayim, it has Arba Knafayim, it has Kartzulayim, its Knafav is Chofin et Rubo. That should be Mutter according to this, right? No, that's why the Torah ends with the word also, Ve'et HaChagav. That was number four. So we managed to do the arba, the sol'am, the chargol, and now we're saying that the reason we throw in the word chagav is because we need to also know that it's part of the very broad general group, which is called chagav. Masha Enkein, this thing is not a chagav. People don't call it a locust, they don't call it a grasshopper, they call it a cricket, let's say, right? What some people call locusts, but which are cicadas, but it's not part of the things that people really refer to by the normal word chagav. So that itself, that extra pasuk, that extra word adds that it needs to have shmo chagav. So that explains why we have four examples. So you might think if that's the case, maybe anything that's called chagav is kosher. Ishmo chagav. Yochol afilu ein lo kol ha-simonim halalu. You might think that the word chagav adds anything that's called a chagav, even if it doesn't have the arba simonim. The Gemara is going to ask how I could think of that. So Talmud Lomar, limin dehu. That's why when it said the chagav after the word chagav, it said the fourth limineu, the et ha-chagav limineu, meaning it has to have Kol ha-simanim halalu plus the chagav. So since it's not needed, so we use it to mean that the chagav is kosher, but only when it's part of the lamineu that we just said. So when we started right at the beginning, and we said these are klolei klolein and prote prote. So basically what we have over here, we have two klolim that really are based on chagav and on chargol. Then we have the specific need for I meant the arpa and the chargol. And then we have the specific need for the chagav. And that is not really part of the klal, pratu klal. And we're going to see that the sol'an was really not necessary because, as we saw, we can actually derive anything that we learned from the sol'an from comparing the extremes of the arpa and the chargol. Okay, so now we have to ask the obvious question. How in the world did you make a mahatzad that does not prove a darn thing? Parech Rav Achoy, I understand what you're talking about over here. You asked, how do we know if it has a Rosh on Aruch? And you said, well, if it's Rosh on Aruch, we can use the mahatzad to say Tzad HaShoveh is only these four simonim, and we don't need to look at the head. But there is a different Tzad HaShoveh. The Tzad HaShoveh is that they have four simonim, plus they don't have an elongated head. So I don't understand how you learned an elongated head from something that does not have elongated head. What am I missing over here? I mean, look, I know what you're going to try to tell me. You're going to tell me that, well, I mean, it doesn't have to be similar in every way to all of the pratim. A klal prat or klal, in which we're marbe, Brucey, please mute, in which we're marbe.
No,
oh my gosh. Mute. No. Bruce. I keep forgetting how to do this from here on out. There must be a way to put it directly on my thing here. Okay, so the question is obvious and it seems ridiculous. There's only one way out of it. Problem is that the one way out of it ruins the whole limud. The one way out of it is to say that when we have a klal prat or klal, so what's the thing that we apply? Klal prat or klal, iyat adam ela ke'en haprat. Ma haprat ex av kol. Now, suppose the prat involves a lot of different examples, which include A, B, C, D, and does the example that you want to be marbe with the similarity, do they have to be similar in every way? Or could they be just similar to one of the issues? So that's the question. Is a klal prat or klal meant to be an exact duplicate? If it's an exact duplicate, so then the Tzad HaShoveh Shaban cannot possibly add something that's not there. But if it only needs to be similar in the fact that it has these four simonim, which is the, remember again, our four simonim is, it has four legs, two jumping legs, and it has the four wings, and it has the chavim et rubo. Those are the four simonim. So maybe there are other ways in which the pratim are similar, but you don't need to match a complete match. Maybe that's what you'll tell me, right? So v'chi tema kiva deshavu barba simanim. Since it's similar to the basic thing that we said they all share, so therefore that's enough to make it kosher. V'lo parchinan, we don't ask, well, it's not similar because it's got a long head. And maybe that's what the Bryce is trying to tell us. That's ridiculous. Of course, that's not what the Bryce is trying to tell us. Because if that's what the Tana of the Braita held, that klal prat or klal does not have to be completely similar, so then why did we need the chargol? Don't say the chargol. The chargol has four simonim. Yes. So we said, well, I mean, I don't know. What if it has a gabachat? And this doesn't have a gabachat. So we learned out of the chargol, right? Don't write the chargol. What do I need the chargol? It's enough that you have the arba and the solam. What's important? Who cares about the tail? I don't know. But obviously, since you had to, so it means that we would have said, no, what do you mean? There's a Tzad HaShoveh. All of the things, the arba and the sol'am, do not have a tail. So therefore, if I wouldn't have known chargol, I would have said if it does have an ovipositor, it's not a kosher species, right? So what's the difference? So if you're telling me I needed to write chargol, then how in the world are you making a Tzad HaShoveh in which the real Tzad HaShoveh is that they all have a rounded head instead of an elongated head, and now you're adding, out of nowhere, you're adding a long head. That's crazy. Now, let's please put on our thinking caps for a moment and just review the way that this evolves, this entire question. Remember, we've been through this many times, but it's so fundamental, I feel it's good for us to review each time. The way that a klal prat uklal works is that the first klal is very general, because if it wouldn't have said anything in the prat, I wish you would have said, whatever has karzulayim, that's what you wrote, so whatever has karzulayim, that's all I need. The second klal, which follows the prat, there's two ways of looking at this. What would have been if there wouldn't have been the second klal? We would have had a klal uprat, right? What's the din of a klal uprat? The prat defines the klal in its entirety. Ein beklal ela ma'ase beprat. Now, what if we would have had a prat and klal? If we would have had a prat and klal, then the klal that comes after the prat would be marba everything except for one thing that is completely the opposite of the prat, right? Those are the rules. Now, when you put the two together and you have a klal, prat, uklal, what you essentially have is an opening of a klal uprat, which is nowhere near as inclusive as the last klal, which is essentially a prat uklal, right? Which one is more definitive? Is a klal prat uklal a klal uprat with a klal added? Or is a klal prat uklal a prat uklal with a klal put on top? The difference is dramatic. Because if you're going to tell me that the first klal is the fundamental part of the klal prat uklal, so then essentially we're going to look at it as being something that is meant to be marbe. So if the klal basra comes along and it's the only reason that we're being marbe, so then, okay, it is completely the prat and the klal. I understand. So it's going to be most of something that is similar to the prat. But there's some who say the second klal is the ikar klal, in which case, if the second klal is the ikar klal, it's the thing that is most of everything, right? So it is coming now as a prat uklal, and prat uklal is most of everything. The klal uprat would only be marba things that are similar to the prat totally, if it hadn't been from the last klal. At least the last klal helps not to limit it only to the mentioned pratim, but they would still have to be similar in every possible way. So those are the two possibilities. So if the klala batra is the ikar klal, so then the batra is dafka, and then it would be marba everything, as long as it's in some way similar to the prat. If the klala kama is the ikar, so then the prat is actually going to be mamayated, would have to be totally similar to the prat. And the last klal is just saying, look, it's not limited to the prat, but you can add things that are totally similar to the prat. But you can't have it halfway. Either you hold that if it's somewhat similar to the prat, that's okay. Or you hold it has to be totally similar to the prat. So if we're saying that in order to know the din about the zanav, we needed to have the chargol, then that means that in order to know about the rosho aroch, you have to give me an example of something that is rosho aroch in the pratim. But there ain't no such example. None of the mentioned pratim have a rosho aroch. So how does this work? You said something ridiculous. You said this is the ma'atzad. It's not the ma'atzad. So what am I missing over here? The whole limud makes no sense, says Rav Achor. So let's see that inside. If you're going to try to tell me, well, look, at least it's similar to the main group that was mentioned here, which all have four simanim. That's enough. It doesn't have to be similar in other ways. So we don't need everything to be the same. So then we can be marba even that rosho aroch. And you can't ask, well, but it's different. No, it's similar enough. But if that's the case, I could have done that about the chargol. The chargol was similar to the arba and the sol'am. It was only different because it had a zanav, right? So I should have said, okay, what's the big deal if it has a zanav? It's still similar in every other way. So then don't bother mentioning it at all. Just write the arba and the sol'am, and that would be sufficient. So obviously, the reason that we didn't do that is because we would have said, no, the common denominator is the fact that they don't have a tail. And therefore, we need to have the Chargal mentioned because it does have a tail. So then the same thing is true over here. You don't have any example of a long head, and you're telling me we're going to be able to be Marba long head. You could have been Marba tail and not need an example of a tail, right? Very clear. So you've got to make up your mind. If you yourself held that we needed to have a chargol, then tell me where the example is of the long head. Okay? This makes no sense. So this is not a mahatzad. This is ridiculous. Ella, Omer of Achoy, you need to penetrate what's really going on here. This sol'am was a waste of time. It was all very nice in terms of a presentation. So it's a nice way to teach children how to do klal prater klal. Yeah, okay, wow, brilliant. Okay, wow, it's amazing. We start with the arba, incredible. We go on to the sol'am, add an additional thing. Then we get to the chargol. This is brilliant. Yeah, there's only one problem. Once you got to the chargol, you got to ask yourself, what the heck is this sol'am there for? Who needs it, right? And the Tana expects that you understand that. That now that I finish my presentation, you're left with a ridiculous sol'am sticking out there, which teaches you absolutely nothing. So therefore, you have to ask yourself, so what's the sol'am? I mean, it doesn't have anything that it can add. So what's it there for? So therefore, if I've now learned out, I could have just had the arba and the chargol, right? Lo lichta rachmana solam. Forget about this solam. Teise mi arba mi chargol. All you need to do is learn everything out of the arba and the chargol. Because what are you going to say? No, it's ad hashava. It has to be similar an arba. This isn't similar to an arba because it doesn't have a gabachat. If it wouldn't have said solam, the arba doesn't have a gabachat, and the sol'am has a gabachat. No, I'll tell you, what do you mean? But the chargol does have a gabachat, so the sol'am should be okay. Yeah, but the chargol has a tail, and the sol'am doesn't have a tail, but the arba also doesn't have a tail. So put it all together, and what do you get? A sol'am as the tzad hashoveh between the arba and the chargol. Now, you're supposed to understand that on your own. It's obvious that the sol'am is telling you nothing, and it's sticking out like a sore thumb. And a sore thumb looks very amazingly like a long head. And therefore, we actually learn out the long head from the sol'am. How do we do that? Because it's called im eino inyan. Since the sol'am has nothing to teach you, except the fact that it sticks out like a sore thumb. So therefore, the only thing that you can learn from it is the one piece of information that was missing, which is the long head. And that tells you that the long head must be included. So, im eino inyan legufo, I have nothing to teach me at all about the sol'am. The sol'am doesn't have a long head. So, tneu inyan l'rosho aroch. We know another one of the very serious distinctive looks in these creatures is the types that have those extremely interesting long heads, which allow them to blend very well into different kind of leaves and grasses, right? So this comes to tell me that even if you've got a long head and you still have the arba simonim, so you have the arba knafayim, you have knafayim chofenes rubo, you have arba raglayim, and you have the kartzulayim, then it would be kosher. So now, bottom line, what's the difference? Is there a bottom line difference between the way that we first did it, which was the Brais and the Torat Kohanim, and the way we just did it now with the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel? I mean, it's just like a matter of teaching us how to go about it, or is there a real difference? Oh, major difference. So, b'mayka mifuge Tana Devei Rav, Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel. Tana Devei Rav does not mean a Tana that Rav said. It's the Tana that's in the Bei Rav, in the Beis HaMedrash. And the Brises in the Beis HaMedrash that everybody knows is the Teras Kohanim Brises. That's part of a basic kindergarten education. So that everybody knows. As far as the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmo, okay, fine. This we call the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmo. What's the difference between them? The difference between them is exactly the sore thumb question. Is a Rosho Aroch included or not? So the Rosho Aroch Kamifuge, because the Teras Kayanim did not have the entire approach that left Solam to be extra, to be marred by the Rosho Aroch. But I'm going to leave you at the edge of your seats so that we can do this as a review tomorrow, because I admit it's a little bit complex, but it's so much fun. It's just amazing to see the information that can be gleaned from the way that a pasuk, it's always shocking to see the information density and to see how it's unpacked in the Gemara. It's one of the most beautiful things. So I want to give you a chance to review it 40 times tonight so that when we do it tomorrow, it'll be all fun and games. Anyway, wishing you all a wonderful Shavuot Tov and Tzorot Tovot and lots of drinking before Barnea gets at you and all types of Elio Hanaviz. And he may El Yeshua sees, Eftach v'lo Echad. Shavua tov v'mevurach all.